Campus FM jippreżenta Is-Sena tal-Istorja. Produzzjoni u preżentazzjoni ta' Emmanuel Buttigieġ flimkien ma' Liam Gawċi.
Merħba l-semija ta' Campus FM għal-programm ieħor is-sena tal-istorja miegħi Emmanuel Buttigieġ u mal-kollega Liam Gawċi. Għall-oħra eżi s-semija ħankuru qegħdin nitkellmu dwar ktieb biex nġibu ħall-attenzjoni tagħkom. Ktieb interessanti ħafna nara jiena Liam. It-titlu tiegħu qiegħed kemm bil-Malti u kemm bl-Ingliż. Bil-Malti l-istorja ta' Malta x'futur, bl-Ingliż Malta's History What Future. Proceedings of a conference held at the Royal University of Malta on 19th and 20th March 1971. Li mbagħad kien ġib publikat fl-1974 u l-edituri tiegħu kienu Ann Williams u Roger Vella Bonavita. Jiena meta kultant ikolli ċans inqalbu ftit, mhux ktieb kbir dan, jolqot kemm affaxxinanti għax qisu snapshot dwar mhux biss l-istat tal-istudju tal-istorja f'nofs is-snin 70, ma daqs iktar fuq is-soċjetà Maltija ta' dak il-moment is-snin 70 għalkemm forsi għadhom maġġor studjati in-dettall huma żbien eċitanti għalhekk ħafna inizjattivi ġodda dejjin, kumpaniji ġodda jinfetħu u anke fl-istorja naħseb dak irrifless b'xi mod.
100%.
It-teżijiet miktuba f'dak id-deċennju huma fost l-iktar interessanti naħseb illi għandna. U meta wieħed iqalleb anki daqsxejn il-kontenut ta' dal-volum anki l-ismijiet li tintaqa' magħhom bħal Ann Williams, il-professur Andrew Vella, Roger Vella Bonavita, kollha nies li dak iż-żmien u oħt minnhom għadhom jikkontribwixxu anki f'dan il-qasam. Naħseb x'kien l-iskop tagħha u x'dak.
Iva, dik hija xi ħaġa li anke meta tara tkun taf li taqabilna ja ngħidu 30 sena ilu li ħafna minnhom iktar issa dax dejjem kienu diġà qegħdin jaħsbu isma' għandna bżonn niddiskutu l-futur ta' dan is-suġġett, għandna bżonn niddiskutu l-futur ta' l-istorja f'Malta. Li tibda tara affarijiet li nnexxinna nagħmlu li għaw miktuba u hekk u mbagħad affarijiet li għadna ma nnexxinniex nagħmlu li hija ngħidu iduqqu naqa' the alarm bells u l-start ringing li jisma' għandna bżonn nafsu l-koll aktar fuq dan il-qasam jew għandna bżonn induru għal dan is-suġġett. Imma wkoll tista' tara kemm imxejn għall-quddiem u kemm isma'. I think we are on the right track, ja ngħidu hekk.
Preżempju qed mill-loqsma li jenfasizzaw dal-konferenza u ktieb kien il-bżonn ta' arkivi iktar organizzati fuq bażi professjonali. Fejn jidħol preżempju l-Arkivju Nazzjonali ta' Rabat, dak hemmhekk żgura minnha progress enormi, arkivi li ma kinux disponibbli bħall-arkivi notarili, issa huma disponibbli, oħrajn għadhom mhumiex forsi fl-istat li kieku nixtiequhom imma wkoll in ġenere hemm improvement.
U hekk kważi mhux qegħdin ngħidu ir-review ta' dan il-ktieb din is-sentenza, imma tibqa' tara li anke dawn l-arkivi li għandhom sintendi min qed imexxihom għandu għall-qalb l-istorja u l-istudju ta' din is-sena li qegħdin nitkellmu fuqha jibqa' dejjem jipprova jdaħħalna fis-seklu 21 għal ftit xhur ilu issa wkoll l-Arkivi Nazzjonali inti tista' tieħu r-ritratti tad-dokumenti
li
żvilupp pożittiv ħafna u mingħajr nirringrazzjaw u ngħid prosit il-min ħadin l-inizjattiva li inti min qed jistudja l-istorja, min irrid ikompli jistudja l-istorja qed tagħmilu l-ħajja ħafna iktar faċli biex u jista' jagħti l-istorja lura.
Eżatt. Aspettu li jolqotni fih dal-proceedings kien l-enfasi li jagħmlu fuq it-tagħlim tal-istorja fl-iskejjel. U milli nista' nifhem jien Andrew Vella kellu għall-qalbu ħafna li dak li jsir fl-akkademja għandu jkun marbut ma' dak li qed isir fl-iskejjel li naħsibu huwa messaġġ universali li għandna nżommuh
u
nħadnuh u nibqgħu naħdmu ħalli jissaħħaħ.
Ftit kliem dan huwa l-ktieb li hija ngħidu jispirak biex tkompli taħdem u kif ukoll jispirak fuq dawk li ġew qabilna kemm ħadmu biex aħna għandna din l-istorja f'idejna.
Nilqgħu l-issemmija tal-programm is-sena tal-istorja ma' Emmanuel Buttigieġ u Malijem Gawċi. U naddu sabiex nitgħu mal-mistidem tal-lum li mhuwiex Malti għaldaqstant daqt naqilbu għall-Ingliż. Bippjaċir nilqgħu l-Dr. Daniel Gullo li huwa Assistant Director tal-Hill Museum and Manuscript Library u Joseph S. McAuliffe Curator tal-Malta Study Center ġewwa St. John's University College fil Minnesota. Huwa studja l-istorja u l-Ispanjol fl-Università ta' Wisconsin-Madison. Wara kompla BMA fl-studji medjevali l-Università ta' Toronto u MA fit-teoloġija ġewwa St. John's University Collegeville. Il-PhD għamilha fl-istorja l-Università ta' Chicago. Huwa partikolarment interessat fl-istorja tal-monastiċiżmu u l-kultura tal-ktieb u l-qari fil-Medjewu tardif u l-perjodu modern bikri. L-aktar proġett reġenti li kien involut fih huwa l-ħolqien tal-V-Himmel Reading Room, li tagħti aċċess diġitali għal kollezzjonijiet arkivistiċi minn madwar 500 biblioteka madwar id-dinja, inkluż Malta. Daniel, thank you for accepting our invitation and for being here with us today. Daniel, you're both a historian and a curator, so we'd really like to explore both sides of you here. And the first question, which we've been asking to all our guests, is, you know, how did you first become interested in history and what is your approach to the subject?
Well, thank you both for inviting me here today. It's a great pleasure to be back here in Malta and to continue the work of the Malta Study Center, both as a historian and as a curator, as we will discuss. You know, I kind of came into history in a strange way. I'm one of those historians who followed a non-traditional path by first becoming a chemist and then realizing that my abilities at upper level calculus were not at the level that one needed to be very successful at the professorial level. So I fell back on my second love, which was Spain and Spanish language and literature. And it's an important point to say that I was actually doing these degrees of my undergraduate career in the late 1980s when post-structuralism, in particular the linguistic turn, was having a major effect not only on the study of language and literature, but also on the field of history.
Right.
And in essence, I really was more of a traditional scholar of literature and not seeing any path open to me at that time because of the real stress on post-structuralism as an approach. I ended up moving into history where I felt more comfortable looking at the role of language and literature in forming communities. And that's where I really began.
Your part.
Yes.
That's where it all started.
Yes. You know, in effect, and this is a good small piece of advice to students, I had faculty telling me I would never get a job if I had maintained a historical approach to languages and literature. And so I just moved into history. Ironically, now the linguistic turn has faded in popularity. And if I had maintained my traditional approach, I would have been very attractive as a scholar in language and literature.
There you go.
That actually leads us to my next question. Today, being a historian, what are the challenges? What challenges do you face in such a modern world where the media and the now is so important?
I think that's, you know, it's one of the hardest things to get across both to lay people and students is that history is a science which is best festina lente. You have to move forward. But you have to move forward slowly simply because accuracy is important and the training takes years. And for me, the biggest challenge right now is the fact that we have to get in front of what I would call asymmetrical popular accounts of history, meaning because of the internet and the rise of easy access information, people are writing narratives which are not really formed or peer-reviewed by professionals. And so there's this challenge to us as professional historians to get out in front of these narratives and to insist upon the professional aspects of our training to deliver a quality approach and methodology and have it be verified by other scholars. Otherwise, the narrative gets corrupted and easily turned into a meme at worst or at best, or a propaganda at worst. And I think these are the, as a profession, the most challenging thing that faces us. And then finding support within the political system to provide adequate funding so that we can have more professionals to provide us space in order to construct those narratives for the public good. And I think that's, in the end, the real issue.
Of course.
History is really about the common good and the cultivation of society. Mm-hmm. And losing that narrative is something that we have to fight against.
So would you say that the historian has almost an obligation to play a role in public debates about a variety of subjects?
Yeah, forgive me for falling back on the classical approach of Western European historiography, going back to Thucydides and so forth, but the role of history in studying the past is to create a dialogue about who we are in the present.
And how does that play out when the Middle Ages, for instance, has been hijacked quite a lot recently to play up narratives of white supremacy and pseudo-Christian interpretations of the past? I mean, it's hard, you know, when you're faced with something like that, because it's easy to put them forward. Sometimes it's harder to put a more balanced narrative across.
Well, I think the first thing that we need to do as historians, professional historians, is to recognize that what's happening now in this particular instance with the appropriation of the Middle Ages for a modern Aryan white supremacist ideology is not something that is new, because the Middle Ages have been appropriated as a subject by scholars ever since the, quote, Middle Ages ended. Now, we can debate when that happened, but the fact of the matter is, if we go back 50, 60 years, 70 years, it was part of the both fascist ideology in Spain, Italy, and Germany. You go back into the 19th century movements of nationalism, you see the medieval period also reemerging, particularly in Southern Europe and in France and in Italy. Uh-huh. And even going back into the 18th century, you can actually see movements where they are looking back to claim some part of the medieval past to justify modern...
Their modern interpretation of their present.
Exactly.
Daniel, you're the first curator in our series, and obviously I do the job as well as a curator. Mm-hmm. And it's not always... Sometimes easy, but it's not always easy to be a curator and a historian at the same time. How is it for you to play this double role?
I had an opportunity to speak about this with Dr. Buttigieg a few days ago, and it's something that I've been thinking about ever since I have accepted the position 3 years ago, is that I'm at what I would almost call the pre-historian level, because my curatorial position is somewhat distinct from a traditional curator, because I do not have my own collection. I do have my own collection, but it's very small in comparison to what a traditional curator has, because the primary mission of the Malta Study Center is to preserve the manuscript heritage of Malta and the Order of St. John of Jerusalem, the Order of Malta. So since I'm in a preservation mode, I have the historical problem of making a choice. So if I go into an archive, or if I approach a community who may wish to work with me, and there's limited funding to do preservation, I'm left with the historical choice that what do I preserve? Because the preservation of collection X over collection Y might in the end determine the historical knowledge that people
will have
in the future. Because the library could burn down the next day. So if I choose library X or library Y, we lose all of that knowledge. And so there's a kind of burden from that standpoint.
What to save. And you get to a point that you ask yourself, can I actually save everything? Will I fail at trying to save everything? And why should I save this, not this? I think it's an internal dilemma every time with regards to that.
Absolutely. And I think this is where being a historian really comes into play, because all historians at our level, when you move through the master's and the PhD, are steeped in historiography. And so we can see what happens when certain amounts of evidence are not used or preserved, and the types of narratives that can be constructed. And if you think of myself, 100 years ago, I might be concentrating solely on the Grand Masters of the Order of Malta. And if everything else was not preserved, that would be the only history we would have.
That we have.
But, here in Malta, after Wettinger and a few others, looking at you know, the common people and at slavery. If I focus only on that, then you don't have the high culture and the relationship with the low. And so this kind of balance of creating narratives, even with regard to women, minority populations, transient populations, migrations, these are significant questions I have to confront, because in effect, I couldn't be constructing a narrative by selection even before the narrative is written.
So there is that role of being a gatekeeper almost in what you're saying, right?
It is, and it is a burden too, because
I imagine, yes.
Of course. Yes. And you actually think about that. Am I worthy to decide? You know, am I worthy to decide? Who am I to decide what is important for the generations to come?
In fact, that's a very good point, Liam, because the issue is here. Over the next year, I'm doing what's called a strategic review, and those who've been in the university understand what a difficulty but enlightening experience it can be if it's done right. And one of the questions I'm asking is, should we develop a committee that should vote upon or decide upon preservation projects rather than leaving it to myself? Because in effect, you've got a non-governmental international organization, me, deciding what collections should be preserved in Malta or in other parts of Europe that have collections related to Malta. And should not the people of Malta have a voice in that?
And for our listeners' pleasure, something more concrete. What was, you know, one of the most interesting things that you managed to document and preserve in the last few years?
I think the most important thing from a local perspective has been working with the Fundazione Patrimonio Malti and their ability to open up access to private archives here in Malta, which have, because of the nature of private archives, it's difficult to use. They lack the resources to provide access. Uh-huh. There are security
issues. They have their own challenges. Huh?
They have their own challenges. And
it's a niche market which was untouched on our island.
Completely untouched. And the amount of documents that we're finding, even in the Piro and the Palazzo, the Piro collection in Valletta and the Palazzo Falzone in Medina, the documents themselves could spawn 20, 30, 40 dissertations without even encompassing the entire collections. These are international collections that span generations, record both local and international history, as much as trade and medicine practices, government, law, even just the circulation of documents are important because they have moved so much in the 18th and 19th century.
We crave details on this program. Give us an insight of something that really interested you in one of these archives.
Okay, so I'll talk briefly about the Piro. There is a collection of documents that there was a Lebanese merchant who's had his cargo seized by the Order of the Knights of Malta. And they came to Malta and were bringing the case in front of the courts. Of course. And the Grand Master, of course, and through the courts were trying to litigate that, no, they had the right to seize it. Giovanni Piro de Piro, however, was a brilliant man. And after 15 years of debate within the courts, there was no settlement there. And so he purchased the case, which is interesting in and of itself, from the Lebanese merchants, and then used the next 5 years to argue the case in front of the Grand Magistrate. Now, the case itself is about 600 documents, so it's a major study in its own right, let alone the fact that you can see Piro de Piro raising his status within society by purchasing a case for, I believe it was like 10,000 ducats, and then ended up making nearly 40,000 ducats out of the settlement. Yes. And so this, and then with that money,
that's a good lawyer.
Business acumen.
And then with that money, he was able to then use that money locally to curry favors by giving loans to the local knights, etc. So there's a larger issue that's involved here. My favorite thing, which I'll be speaking about today at the conference in Rabat, is a inquisitorial document that Olaf Gulcher acquired in Rome. Here we actually see him purchasing records and bringing them back to Malta. And it was a book that was confiscated by the Inquisition and then given to the Biblioteca Alessandrina. This particular title, which was Military Technology, ended up being deaccessioned in the 19th century, then acquired by Gulcher in the early 1920s and brought back to Malta. So you can kind of see this history of the book, which unravels a story of inquisitorial practice in the 17th century, the beginnings of the university library with the construction of the Biblioteca Alessandrina, the lack of funds to hold the collection, so they sell part of it, and then it comes back to Malta. Right.
So we are not the first ones to be passionate about saving stuff, and we are not the first one to have problems to preserving stuff.
No.
And that's beautiful.
And I think a key point you're making, and perhaps you could say a bit more about it, perhaps the layperson who doesn't do the historical research thinks, you know, there's an archive, it's always been there, things don't move, and so on. But it's obviously not the case. Documents have a life of their own, don't they? Including movement.
Yeah, one of the things that allows me, in going back to bringing two questions together, what does my role as historian have to do here, and also my role as curator? As a historian, I'm keenly aware of how archives are constantly fractured. There's theft, there's war, there's dislocations, different governments come in, different organizations. Here in Malta, you go from different archives, one by the Inquisition, one by the Church, one by the Knights of Malta. Then the French come in, things get moved, some get stolen, some get lost, some get transported to different institutions. The inquisitorial collection, of course, now is held by the Church. And then the British come in. And then you've got another layer of history which allows more dislocation, more opportunities for movement. And that in itself is extremely crucial, because as a historian, I have to be keenly aware of all of these key moments so that when I pick up a document, I have to ask myself, is this the original collection within which it belonged? And if not, where should it be?
And what should happen then? If, for example, and this is something, again, I think it's more of a curatorial question, that just, for example, this a book which was de-accessed from a library and bought by someone else, and then it was sold again, where should it be? Which I'm trying to find a more concrete one simple example that comes to mind is from my personal experience, where a document which pertained to a notary was kept in a private collection by a gentleman who didn't know what he had, and he actually donated it to the museum. However, I know it should belong to another collection which exists. How do you go about that?
Well, I think one of the best things to remember now, and this is one of the best things about being in the European Union, is that the European Union has allowed, through the advent of digital technology and international things like Archives Portal Europe and Europeana, the need to be less litigious with regard to collection management. So, for example, if in the early 1900s a book moved from one collection to another, perhaps illegally or one way or the other, it's less important to, you know, put that book back where it really belongs and engage in this whole issue of provenance and litigious aspects, because you can still make the book public by putting it online and therefore create access locally, even though it's located somewhere else. That's one way of thinking about it, in a very kind of generous way. On the other hand, you know, it's not as if things don't get stolen and we have to deal with that issue itself. The question is timing. You know, did it take place in the 19th century? Did it take place in the last 10 years ago? And that's a completely different situation.
So you talk about digitization, and you're spearheading this enormous project, Vehemen. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about it.
It's extremely important to remember that not only do we digitize documents, we make them completely free and available to the public here in Malta. So if you go to https://www.vehemel.org, every Maltese person can freely access all of the digitization work that we do here in Malta. We started digitizing in 2007 with the National Archives, but we've expanded that to the Palazzo Falzone, to the Cathedral Archives, to the DePiro project with the Fundazione Patrimonio Malti in Valletta, and with other projects here. So currently, believe it or not, there are nearly 2,000 digitized manuscripts from Malta in that collection.
Amazing.
Amazing.
And we hope to be adding several more collections in the next decade.
Only recently you uploaded Epoca Gallica onto and on behalf of a lot of Maltese researchers, I would like to thank you for, because it is
that deals with the French
with the French blockade period, and suddenly you have at the tip of your fingers you have this treasure trove, which obviously was not as accessible before.
No, largely untapped.
Yes, largely untapped, and so much to do.
We start winding down.
Yes, unfortunately.
Is there any historiographical controversy that has, played a part in the way you look at the past and interpret the past?
I mean, I think for me it will always be the linguistic turn of the 1980s and early 1990s, simply because my love for history always will remain with language. I study the role of language and over time, and how language and the choice of words can affect historical consciousness. And I don't think we're going to move away from it. It's always going to resurface, because in the end, you can't interpret a document as a historian unless you know the real meaning of the word.
Of the language, yes. That's something I always try to impart to my students as well, that a word is never really neutral, that there's so much.
And it changes over time.
Why is history important in our society today?
I think fundamentally it is the glue that will bind the common good as we engage in a period of tribalism. Because the one thing that history can show us, if we do it well and we do it right, and with the ideas, I still believe it's a science. It's a social science more than it is a humanities, and we can debate that at another program. but I do believe that we can approach it with a scientific manner, and through that, with peer review and with methodology, have conscious arguments over who we are as a people and the communities and other groups that form part of that narrative, rather than just one single narrative.
Right. Uh-huh.
And with that, we come to the end of today's program. Thank you, Dr. Daniel Gullo, for being with us today and sharing all this very, very interesting information. Fismi u fisem Manuel, nirringrazzjaw l-semmija li kienu maħna illum. Għal darboħra, li mu Manuel inselmulkom.
Grazie.
Għadkom kem smajtu. Is-sena tal-istorja. Bi produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni ta' Emmanuel Buttigieġ u Liam Gawċi.